Welcome to the IBJ podcast for the week of July 15th. I'm Leslie Weidenbender. Mason King is on vacation. In this week's IBJ, Peter Dunn, who you may know best as Pete the Planner, writes about the wisdom of the 15-year mortgage. The 30-year mortgage is the default, of course, and it shouldn't be, Pete writes. So I ask him to come by the podcast studio and talk about mortgages, house payments, and what makes a home affordable. We're back with Peter Dunn, and we're so excited to have him back on the podcast. One of our favorite guests, and always full of great practical information. Today, we want to talk about mortgages and buying homes. And I want to start by challenging, or at least letting you talk about the premise that you need to buy a house to build wealth, that you can't build wealth while renting.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, if you grew up in the Midwest, like I did, Speedway, Indiana, and Pike Township, you grew up in a family home that your family generally owned, and it was very normal. I mean, it was just standard, right? And so then what happened is we all grew up and generations passed through is that lending loosened during this time frame. And so no one would tell you no. It was a blank check from a housing perspective. And so you got people who said, well, if growing up in a house that we owned was a good thing then obviously it's a good thing now, and I can borrow as much as I want. And Leslie, what has happened is that a lot of very smart, very high income earners have gotten themselves into a pretty big pickle because housing's the biggest decision you ever make financially in terms of your income. And I think people are getting a rude awakening.
So let's back up for just a second. Is there anything wrong with buying a house? What are the advantages to owning a house?
As long as you can afford to fix the home you live in, buy a house. That's my standard. If you can afford to furnish it and fix it without going into debt, jump in. And if you want to go a little beyond that, ideally, if the mortgage payment is between 25 to 30% of your take-home pay, if you can put at least 10% down on the home, if you can't put at least 10% down on the home, I would argue that you've got bigger fish to fry. And if you can commit to staying there for about 5 years to account for any market swings. And of course, beyond that, with my column said in the IBJ this week, did I just reference my own column? Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, you're allowed to do that. It's
called a plug. I prefer a 15-year mortgage. I think it is the cleanest, smartest way for people without cash flow problems to buy a home. Because so often when we make a purchase, whether it's a home or a home printer, people tend to afford the payment and never really think about truly purchasing a home. Remember when you bought your first home and there's that feeling, we got approved. And it's a great feeling and it's nice to celebrate, but the real celebration is paying off the home. People don't think about that. And they especially, Leslie, don't think about that in relation to where they will be in their life when that home will be paid off. My home will be paid off when I'm 53. And I take great pride in that. I'm not bragging because I planned it that way.
So let's unpack the sort of the scenario you put together here. Let's start with the 25 to 30%. We hear that a lot, especially sort of 30%. We live in the Midwest where houses really aren't that expensive. Is 30% really the right amount?
If it's a 15-year mortgage, I would feel free to climb between 30 and 32%. If you're doing a 30-year mortgage and you're doing a 30-year mortgage so that you can buy more home, if the specific reason, people don't think about this, but most people get a 30-year mortgage so they can afford more home. But when you do that, what you end up doing is you don't build equity as quickly in your home. You tend to have higher utility costs because you're buying a bigger home, higher maintenance costs, higher property tax costs, and higher insurance costs. I mean, the term perfect storm is always overused. I mean, really, it is. But when it comes to someone trying to grow into their mortgage payment with a 30-year mortgage because they want to buy more house, it's always a perfect storm and it frustrates people and they never admit that that's what's stressing them out financially.
So let's talk about the difference between a 30-year and a 15-year mortgage. Why is the 15-year mortgage so much better?
It starts with math, right? Because first of all, you got a lower interest rate. So if you're going to get a 15-year mortgage or a 10-year mortgage for that part, the fewer years the mortgage, the lower interest rate's going to be. So that's a number one. Then the period of time in which you're paying it, the length of time which you're paying it, just means that you're constantly paying a mortgage. I mean, the way mine would be structured is that I would have a mortgage at 68 as opposed to 53.
And when you have a 15-year mortgage, every payment, more of it is going to principal, right? I mean, when you have a 30-year mortgage, for years when you're watching those payments, if you actually look down at the breakdown of the payments, for a huge number of years, you're paying mostly interest, right? And with a 15-year mortgage,
you're getting after it.
Yeah.
My colleagues make fun of me a lot, Leslie, for lots of reasons. But at the top of their list is that I physically drive to a bank and make my mortgage payment every month.
Okay, I'm going to make fun of you for that too.
Okay, it's okay, but let me tell you why. Because I love the idea of buying my home back from the bank and that there's a finite number of payments. And when there's a 15-year structure to that, it feels finite. I've had a 30-year mortgage and I can tell you, it doesn't feel like a finite number of payments. It feels like you're just throwing money into a void. But I was there this week at the bank and I love it. They think I'm a weirdo, but I love it. I love it. The rest of my life is automated except my mortgage, which I pay in person. I don't think people realize that. People always say, well, my home's an investment. It's not if you don't treat it that way, right? You can say anything's an investment. And one of my favorite things that's not an investment that people say it's an investment besides homes are engagement rings. Well, it's an investment. I don't know if it is. You know, you're not going to sell it.
No.
Right?
Well, hopefully not.
Well, you never know. But with housing, people call things an investment when it's not. Now, there are clearly investment properties. And it is also worth noting, a 30-year mortgage can be fine, especially if you pay faster on it.
I was going to ask you about that. A lot of people will say, I'd rather have the security of a 30-year mortgage because my payment's lower, but I'm going to make double payments to pay it off faster. Is there validity to that?
I ate a cheeseburger for lunch today with the belief that I will work out twice when I get home tonight. So we'll see what happens. Now, here's the thing. I totally agree with that idea. The idea that I want flexibility in my life. Maybe there's instability in the industry I'm in. Maybe in a family situation. Maybe the age of my children or such that I want free cash flow for college. So that's great. You get the flexibility. But when you waste flexibility, when you waste financial flexibility, you make your situation worse. So instead of investing the difference between a 15-year and 30-year mortgage or paying more on the 30-year mortgage, if you simply increase your lifestyle or allocate money to other expense categories which don't build stability, Leslie, I mean, that is the Midwestern curse that so many people deal with, but they can fix.
So they could fix.
Oh, you can fix. I mean, it's never too late. I mean, I don't want to turn this into like a after school special here, but it is never too late to rethink. You don't have to refinance. It's never too late to rethink how you use your mortgage as a financial tool.
Now, what do you mean? Obviously, refinancing is an option.
It is an option. You know what people don't do enough? They don't go to their financial advisor, their financial planner, and ask them about refinancing. Instead, they go to a banker or any sort of lender, and they ask them, which, you know, I'm thankful for my lender. They're very honest, but I would not ask them about, you know, should I do it? I'm going to go to someone that understands money differently and that has no skin in the game. But it's never too late, because what you can do is you can pay more if it makes sense in your financial plan. Refinancing is interesting because whether you're refinancing a student loan, a car loan, or a mortgage, you have to understand, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to pay a lower monthly payment? Because that's completely different than maybe the length of term in which you want to be paying the loan or the total amount you pay over time. I mean, in my example that I had in my column this week, you're paying well over $100,000 less by securing a 15-year mortgage versus a 30-year mortgage. I think it was like $140,000 based on my math. And that matters.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. The IBJ podcast is sponsored by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com. So let's go back to where we're starting out. Maybe we're buying our first home. Maybe we're moving up from a first home to a family home. So it is tempting. There are a lot of cool places out there. It's very tempting to want to try to buy as much house as possible. And in the moment, it seems like a good thing to do.
Hey, look at me. I am not a beacon of discipline, right? I get it. Here's the thing, though. There's a term you just used that didn't exist 30 years ago. Family home versus starter home versus empty nester home. Like, my grandparents still live on the same street in Speedway, Indiana that they lived in the 1950s, right? It's we have created this. Industry has created this. Marketing has created this idea that there is this hierarchy of homes that you make your way through. One that I intend to write about here soon for you is sort of the false confidence that one can get in building their dream home. What is a dream home? What does that mean? And by the way, dreams aren't always practical. And people will say things like, well, it's my dream. It's like, I don't care. You know, like,
oh, yeah. If I built my dream home, yeah. There's nobody could afford that.
But a lot of people do. A lot of people, specifically in their mid-50s to early 60s, who have a great deal of liquid assets, they're able to make those decisions. And because they've done pretty well financially, because they don't have to necessarily borrow as much, it's always just rubber stamped is a good idea. And they can do whatever they want. I don't want the takeaway here to be that I'm like judging everyone's housing decisions. But I think if you step back and think it is your biggest asset for most people, it needs to be treated with a little bit of respect.
And so, you know, somebody decides, okay, I think I'm going to go for a less expensive home, maybe even a 15-year mortgage. What about the argument that that less expensive home is not building me very much wealth?
I love it. Yeah, it's great. it's making my argument. Ultimately, my two favorite parts of a 15-year mortgage, and this is where I sound real nerdy because I like really get excited. The two things I get most excited about is that it forces you to buy less home. We spend too much on housing. We just do. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. The new homes we were building in the 1950s, and by we, I mean someone else, I wasn't around. They were about a third of the homes being built, size-wise, that are being built today. And family units were bigger in the 1950s than today. We're just kind of this point culturally where we just keep building bigger and bigger homes. So I think the 15-year mortgage puts like a governor on you. The second thing I love about a 15-year mortgage is that it's the ultimate comeback story tool. So let's paint a picture of someone who lived life and had its ups and downs and things were good and bad. It's a recovery story. And all of a sudden you find yourself 50 years old. Maybe you got foreclosed upon when you were 43. Maybe you lost your job. You're 50 now. Your credit's improved. You get a 15-year mortgage. You retire when you're 65 or 67. You have no payment. You've created a scenario in which you don't need more income in retirement.
You actually need less income in retirement.
You need less income, and you attack the problem by both sides, right? You attack it because you're able to accumulate assets, but more importantly and more wisely, you're able to create a scenario in which you don't need a lot of income or assets to create the income because you've learned to live on less.
So let's also go back to you said if you've got 10% to put down on a home, yeah. That's another governor.
The real rule here is 20%. But I find that unrealistic, very frankly. 20% will prevent you from having PMI if you don't have 20%.
Private mortgage insurance.
Yes.
Which is an amount added onto your mortgage, right?
Yep. To,
it's a fee I think a lot of people don't even realize is there.
Absolutely. I think the bigger factor for me why I say 10% is if you're the type of household that can perpetually save money and prove that you can accumulate the assets to the tune of 10% of whatever you're buying, you're the type of person that can build savings to maintain and fix that home when it breaks.
10 years ago, 15 years ago, we talked a lot or we heard a lot about all the different mortgage options. You know, we're talking really about fixed rate mortgages here, 30-year fixed rate mortgages. There were, at that time, it was common to see interest-only mortgages, to see variable rate mortgages. Do we see that much anymore?
You see them. I still don't like them. This is my opinion. Most of this is my opinion, but I think most people figured this out. I don't care for less conventional mortgages like a 5-1 adjustable rate mortgage or 3-1 or 7-1, because what happens is once that 1, 3, 5, or 7-year period is up, then the interest rate resets to a different level, and if interest rates are higher, you could be in trouble. Interest-only mortgage is 99% of the time a really bad idea, unless you're actually using it as an investment tool, which is a very specific technique.
And right? Most of the things we're talking about really here are when people are buying homes that they're going to live in.
I really don't have much to say about investment homes other than to say that anyone generally getting into that market is probably getting some advice and can make good decisions there. What I don't like to see in hot real estate markets is this tulip mania feel, right? Where it's like, they're going fast. This one sold in a day. We got to get this one. And that's where mistakes are made, right? I think anytime there's just run on housing or run on Bitcoin or run on anything, the smart person steps back and says, okay, maybe we go the other direction. Maybe we sell and rent for a while. You know, that's the other thing. I've seen plenty of people who gotten themselves in a jam solve their entire financial struggles by selling a home they couldn't afford. One of my best friends, frankly, sold a home that he couldn't afford after a really tough, long period. And he's doing better than you can possibly imagine. And it was all about the house.
What do you see from people that makes you realize that maybe that's the situation they're in? They're just stressed about their finances in general, and they're living in a big old house.
Here's the deal. If you find that your mortgage payment is more than 40% of your take-home pay, and combined with utilities and maintenance expenses, you're close to 55 or 60%, and you're wondering, like, why can't we make ends meet? Why can't we afford our past and our present and fund our future? There you go. That's the answer. It's tough to look in the mirror and say, we committed to three decades worth of struggle. And by the way, this is another thing that's important for me to say. Don't feel judged by this. Like, let it empower you to make a change. Don't do it in a jaded way. But just finally ask the question that you didn't at first.
I think this is probably obvious to most of our listeners. And you talked a little bit about asking the bank for advice on things. But I think we have to say that one of the dangerous things you can do is make a decision about how much you can afford by what they'll approve you for.
So one of the most dangerous financial tools that's come around in the last 20 years, at least, is the online mortgage calculator. So the way they're structured is, and they're often marketed as, how much house can I afford? And this is sort of a weird thing, but let's go down this. What is one penny more than what you can afford? It's what you can't afford. So this is to suggest you're going somewhere and you're entering an amount and they are telling you the absolute most they'll let you borrow before you can afford to borrow anymore. And we're all like, oh, good. I'm glad that's the number. What we don't realize is one penny beyond that is someone who is trying to loan us that money is like, too rich for me, buddy. Right? It's mind-blowing if you think of it that way. That's why I think putting your own constraints on yourself. This is why overhousing, which is what we call it at our offices, this is why overhousing is so dangerous, because you don't feel like you can live life because you're in this house. It's costing you so much. You can't go on vacation. You can't enjoy the holidays. You can't save for college. But you got this thing, right? You're living in this thing. There's this very common phrase, to make a house a home, right? There's lots of ways people say it. I'm convinced that this has led to a lot of problems.
They're right? Making a house a home.
Yeah, because it's really personified the role of a home in our lives, that it's something that just needs to be, you know, stroked and petted and rubbed. And it's like, all right.
It has to be made perfect.
Yeah, it's a shelter. It's a shelter. And look, I understand I sound like a fuddy-duddy, but this is all I do. I sit around and sort of think through these issues, and we're exposed to thousands of these a year. And I can just tell you, anecdotally, without the evidence to show you right now, more financial lives are ruined by housing, short of medical crises, a lack of retirement savings, and poor college choices than anything else.
Things like not having enough money for retirement can be absolutely tied to what kind of decision you made about your house.
Absolutely. And I would also say, I keep talking about comeback stories. If you're listening to this right now and you're just trying to get your stuff back together, A, keep going. B, your house can be the final chapter in this in a good way. Like by owning it outright in retirement, can require you to need less income. With the pension going away, which it more or less has, you know, 10 to 16% of people have a pension in the private sector today. There has to be a way to afford retirement. And I feel like eliminating your largest monthly obligation is that path.
Pete, thank you so much for talking to us about mortgages. I'm sure we're going to have you back very soon. We'll tackle another topic. I'm
excited for the comments section.
Thanks again to Peter Dunn for joining us to talk about money. I want to point out a few other stories in this week's IBJ. John Russell has an interesting story about a new startup called MindX that has found a way to objectively measure pain levels and detect some mental health problems. Also, Mickey Shuey writes about the discussions the city of Indianapolis is having with the NFL to try to bring the draft to the city. To read these stories and more, go to ibj.com or check the newspaper delivered to your home or office. You can get full access to all our award-winning stories by going to ibj.com and hitting the subscribe button. Thanks again for joining us. Mason will be back next week.